You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on news that made headlines around our region this past week. Our panel joining us live in studio today, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Nicole Foy with the Idaho Statesman, and Heath Drusen with Boise State Public Radio News. Welcome to the program, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You know, I know the state of the state was only on Monday, but as we were talking before we came on air, it feels like about a month ago. However, I'm sure there are people that have not listened to it or paid attention. So because of that, Betsy, we are going to talk about what Governor Little talked about in his second State of the State address. This was Monday to kick off the legislative session. And a lot of it really focused on budgetary issues.
That's right. And the State of the State address and budget address have been combined for several years. So when the governor gave his State of the State address to a joint session of the legislature, he also simultaneously released his entire state budget proposal. And so some of the broad principles that he outlined in his speech were immediately matched with more detailed budget proposals. And I was busily scurrying around putting those two together because it's kind of, I guess maybe it's not the most elegant way to put it, but it's a huge news dump in one day. We find out the entire agenda for the session coming from the governor, and then he throws it to the legislators and they get to decide what they want to do with it. But kind of the top lines were that he proposed a really conservative budget with only 3.75% growth in state general fund spending. That's the lowest that we've seen since 2014. When we were still climbing out of the recession, and that was extremely well received among the legislature. They liked that approach. They were glad to see that from Brad Little. A 4% increase for education, the governor's top priority with some significant initiatives there from his education task force, but a 12% increase in the corrections budget. And there are reasons for that, including that the governor is proposing adding more than 800 new prison beds, including 500 out of state, because we've just got so many inmates right now. But he also is proposing a $5.9 million initiative to provide services to the highest risk parolees to try to slow that revolving door that we've got going, where something like 2/3 of our prison inmates who arrive there are coming back from failed probation or parole.
Yeah, I think he said it was what we 62% of our inmates in Idaho. It's parole and probation violations.
Right. And depending on how you look at it, if you look at admissions, it could be as high as 77%. Wow. It is very high and it's higher than most states. The governor also proposed putting $35 million towards grocery tax relief. Now, that's less than half of what it would take to actually remove the 6% sales tax from groceries. And so it's up to the legislature, with which the governor plans to engage, as to how they would approach that, whether that means they would increase the grocery tax credit, they would remove the sales tax from groceries at some time in the future, they would phase it out. We don't know. And so we're looking to see how all that plays out.
So, Betsy, when he gives his budget proposals, they are proposals, and we should make that clear. I mean, there are times where there are certain executive orders, and he talked about the administrative rules. Mm-hmm. But for people who may not, you know, be fully aware of this, talk a little bit about how, I mean, what happens next? I mean, he lays this out, but this isn't law of the land at
this
point.
That's right. The governor proposes, the legislature enacts. And so the legislature receives the governor's budget proposals and says, thank you very much. Now we'll set our own. However, they do not ignore them. This is a big, complex thing, the budget for an entire state and every single agency. And in Idaho, we have a joint committee with 10 members each from the House and the Senate that will go through every one of those proposals agency by agency, hold hearings, dig down into the details, and come up with their own plan based loosely on what the governor proposes, but likely with some changes.
We're going to get back to the legislative session in a moment, but I want to turn to you, Heath, and talk about a story that you recently did in regard to firearm background checks and how that this is used to estimate gun sales. And so there was new data that came out saying that it really spiked in 2019, but that's kind of an easy way to put it, I guess. It's much more complicated.
Right. The numbers are much more complicated. And if listeners are kind of wondering, you know, why should I care? I'm in Idaho. Just to put it in context, our state actually relies very heavily on the firearms industry. There's a few different measures out there that put us in the top two, basically, of per capita reliance. So there's a lot of firearms manufacturers, ammunition manufacturers. It's a big part of the economy, actually, even though it's one that maybe you don't see very much. So these numbers that came out, it's very hard to measure firearm sales because there's not a repository of this is how many sales happen. We don't record every sale. What we do record, the federal government, that is background checks. So when you buy your gun at a dealer, a federally licensed dealer, you have an instant background check to make sure that you are allowed to buy a gun. Those are recorded, and that's what these numbers are. So it's not a – but it's not a clean number because those checks can be used for other things. So those checks
– oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So like permits, for example. Mm-hmm. So those checks went way up. But I was talking to people much smarter about me than about the firearm industry, and they said, you know, while these background check numbers were way up, the actual gun sales, it looks like they were basically flat, up a little bit. So you had a 2 million increase in background checks, but only about 100,000 increase in sales. So a pretty big
gap.
That's
a huge gap.
Right. And so what's happening is there's certain states, Kentucky was one example, where they did about, I think it was about 400,000 checks for permits. So that's like, it's not Idaho, so you actually have to have a permit to carry concealed. And in that case, the state is actually doing background checks to make sure that people are allowed to have that permit. And now some states are doing it monthly or just regularly. So that's increasing the number of checks, and it's making people who follow the gun industry have to kind of recalibrate those numbers.
So then if you look at Idaho, we probably didn't see then as many numbers, though those numbers increase if it comes to background checks and things like that.
Right. For a state like Idaho where – we have very few laws basically regulating guns now. The background checks you're going to see are going to be – a lot more of those are going to be actual sales, mm-hmm. because that's one of the last things that we actually use this national instant background check system for.
Nicole, I want to talk with you because we've actually got some good news when it comes to the agricultural outlook for Idaho this coming year.
Yeah, actually. So when you look at our ag revenue out of Idaho last year, we actually hit the second highest ever that we've received. And that's really interesting considering the number of hits that Idaho agriculture took this year. It wasn't necessarily an easy year, but the numbers are showing that the revenue was way up. And of course, this is before farmers factor in, you know, other things they have to pay for, such as employment and stuff like that. But milk brought in $2.38 billion. Cattle and calves brought in $1.41 billion, and potatoes brought in $1 billion, and they're predicting that it will go up next year as well. And so that's really good for Idaho, since so much of our economy relies on it. Something like 1 in 8 jobs is an agricultural job. It's really, really important and shocking, honestly, considering some of the impacts of the trade war this year. Potatoes themselves had a really hard hit in October. A lot of farmers lost a lot of their crops. But there so much innovation and drastic attempts to keep up with how quickly the industry is changing. Idaho's really leading the charge on that in a lot of places, especially in the dairy industry.
And I think when we look at the numbers, what I always find just fascinating, because Idaho is, you know, the famous potato, mm-hmm. it's not our leading agricultural
source. It is number 3. Yes, some people, like, you know, it's we have the potato drop, and yet they're only the number the third highest grossing crop for Idaho. Of course, we are the nation's leading producer of potatoes, so that might be, you
so
know,
that's
we can
of it.
Still
yeah,
we
yeah,
can
yeah.
still hold on to that one.
Well,
but yeah.
And look, we don't need to drop milk
yes.
on New Year's Eve. Okay?
I don't think that would
really
be nice.
Could you imagine
it might
what
be
that
frozen.
Would be like?
I mean, we could drop ice cream on New Year's.
There you go.
So does that mean we're stuck with the potato jokes?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 You know. Nicole, with this then, when they look at that, can they predict then what this may look like come – I mean, if we look at, you know, the next 12 months, or is this just numbers that were pulled from?
So right now they are actually, the University of Idaho agricultural economists are predicting that revenue will, farm income will increase next year and that it will be the highest year ever. But of course, that depends on a lot of things, including ongoing trade talks. And those always affect things, specifically our milk prices. That's mm-hmm. really going to have a big impact. And of course, unemployment numbers are still very low for Idaho. And so that means the labor force is stretched tight. And nowhere is that a closer margin than in Idaho's ag jobs, and especially in Idaho's dairy industry. So there's a lot of things that could change, but right now it looks fairly positive. And talking to a lot of experts, talking to the Idaho Farm Bureau, they're saying that it's been a rough couple years for Idaho agriculture, but they're very optimistic that we seem mm-hmm. to have turned some kind of corner where at least, you know, farming's never going to – not necessarily going to make anyone incredibly rich, but the margins might be a little bit more comfortable going forward.
And maybe not seeing farms have to close. I mean, we've seen that.
Yes, and that's definitely been something this year. Of course, Idaho makes a lot of income from the big farms. Family farms are always going to be – it's always going to be a difficult industry for them, especially when you look at the Treasure Valley. Farmland is, of course, consistently disappearing, and that's what's getting eaten up is those small farms that are surrounded by developments.
Our panel today, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Heath Drusen with Boise State Public Radio News, and Nicole Foy with the Idaho Statesman. I want to get back to the legislative session because, you know, we're going to be talking about it a lot. So get prepared, folks. So, Betsy, let's start with some of the governor's proposals that he is asking for.
Sure. And so among the governor's proposals that we haven't already discussed, one is with regard to state employee pay. And he is proposing merit raises averaging 2%. And typically for the last 5 years, both the governor and the legislature have supported 3%. However, the latest state commission report says that state employee compensation, when you factor in both pay and benefits, has stabilized at just 12% below the market. It used to be much lower.
But it's still 12%
below the market. And so the recommendation from that state report was at least 2% for next year. So now the legislature is chewing over the governor's recommendation. And given the concern about revenue and about setting a conservative budget, I think it's more likely that they will go with the 2% this year. It's important to know that that is not an across-the-board raise. That's an average. It's the amount of money that they will allocate for merit raises. And then supervisors will decide who gets how much. And some employees might get nothing. It's all dependent on performance. The state does not give cost of living increases. And last year, there was actually a slight variation from that. The legislature said we're so far below market, and it's been so long that as part of the basically 3% increase they granted, they said every employee with satisfactory performance would get at least $550 as a raise. And that had the effect of an across-the-board raise for some, and many state employees are quite low paid, and so that was, in fact, significant.
Now, how does that work, then, with the governor then asking for every state agency to tighten their belts and take these percentages out of their budget? Is this merit money, as you mentioned, does it come from a completely different pool? Because a lot of times these state agencies have to find money within their own budget to give out these raises.
Basically, the proposal, the way that it's structured, they call it CEC, change in employee compensation. It's a budgetary decision. And so that amount of money would be granted to state agencies in order to increase state employee pay by that amount. They are, as you pointed out, still also being asked to cut their budgets. They're to do a base reduction in every agency for next year of 2%. And the agencies have all submitted plans. Some are more detailed than others on how they would do that. But once again here, the governor proposes, the legislature enacts. And so it will be up to the legislature to decide how they set the budget and how to incorporate those cuts, how much to budget for what, and how much state employees might or might not get in raises.
And the legislative session is off and running. So, I mean, there have already been some work going on with the legislature, one being a proposal for a hands-free law.
Well, so I'd want to clarify that a little because there was a bill introduced. It was one of the very first bills introduced this session, and it came from the House Transportation Chairman, Representative Joe Palmer of Meridian. It is not exactly a hands-free law. Right now, there are 7 cities or counties in Idaho that have enacted local hands-free ordinances saying drivers have to use hands-free devices if they want to talk on the phone while they're driving. The state has looked at enacting a statewide law to do the same, as have many other states, but it has never passed. And this year, Representative Palmer, who is from Meridian, the first Treasure Valley city to enact such an ordinance, has proposed a bill that would eliminate all of those local ordinances as of July 1st and replace them with a new statewide distracted driving law. And this would allow police officers to cite someone who is a dangerous distracted driver, that they see them doing something that's dangerous distracted driving, whether it's talking on the phone, eating, grooming themselves, or
putting
whatever.
Mascara on in your driving.
Yes.
What is that about?
And there are some features of this particular proposal. I spoke yesterday with Meridian Police Chief Jeff Levy, who has been overseeing the enforcement of Meridian's mm-hmm. ordinance. In fact, it just started a week ago. They've issued 18 citations. And he didn't like this proposal. He said it's extremely discretionary for law enforcement as to what you think is mm-hmm. dangerous and distracted. And he thought that we should actually have standards in the law so that law enforcement officers, everyone enforces it the same rather than each one doing it differently. He said, if you take a sip of coffee when you're driving, one officer might think that's distracted driving. Another might not. And it is not the only proposal out there. And I should mention that Representative Palmer noted that. And he said he's introducing his bill to get the dialogue started, mm. which is something the Meridian police chief said he really appreciated. There are several other bills in the works. Senator Chuck Winder from Boise is working on one. Representative Chad Christensen from Eastern Idaho, who last year attempted to just repeal all local ordinances and not replace them with anything, is also working on one. There are stakeholder groups working on bills. And it does sound like this might be the year when we see some kind of action on the issue of distracted drivers yakking on their phones and not watching what they're mm-hmm. doing on the roads. It's one of those things where there in recent years has seemed to be a disconnect between public sentiment and the legislature, because polls have shown that there's strong support for hands-free laws.
Mm-hmm.
And people get really mad about other drivers who are distracted and talking on their phones. But the legislature has been very reluctant to legislate in that area.
And then let's talk about minimum wage, because this is also coming up as a potentially hot topic.
Sure. And right now there is an initiative that's gathering signatures to raise Idaho's minimum wage, which hasn't gone up in over a decade, is still $7.25 an hour, is the lowest of our surrounding states. And 20 other states just raised their minimum wages again on January 1st, putting us further behind. The way that this has come up at the legislature is a little bit unexpected. During the very first agency budget hearing that was held in JFAC this year, the Division of Veteran Services Director, former Senator Marv Hagedorn, said he's got a big problem. He can't hire certified nurses aides in Lewiston because right across the border, the Washington minimum wage has just gone up to $13.50 an hour. And the average wage for CNAs in our state veterans' homes right now is $13.48 an hour. That is a problem. And so he's got a budgetary request to raise the pay for CNAs. And he said, you know, this is an issue. We have a shortage of nurses throughout Idaho, and we could see this crop up in other areas as well.
And it's so interesting when you look at these border towns, right, when it comes to things like pay, because we've seen an exodus of teachers in the state of Idaho, because you can live in Payette and work in Ontario and make more money. So it's going to be interesting how this plays out, because you may not see as big of an effect if you live smack in the middle of the state, mm-hmm. but it's these towns that surround these other states that have a town right next door.
And it's not just one of our neighboring states.
Right.
Pretty much it's all of our neighboring states. And I mean, on teacher pay, I think there's been recognition of that now for some years. And the governor has a proposal to put another $30 million next year into teacher pay through the career ladder, targeting the most experienced veterans teachers. Last year, they passed legislation to raise starting teacher pay to $40,000 a year, but they phased it in over 2 years. So there's going to be a vote this year on doing the second phase of it. The governor has already said, yes, let's do it. And I think the legislature probably will go along. But it's an issue. It's a continuing issue. And even with those improvements, we will still lag behind several of our surrounding states.
Nicole, you've covered this in the past. And animal cruelty there was a big story that happened a year or two ago, and PETA was involved. And now we're seeing PETA coming out again.
Yeah, PETA's had quite an interest in Idaho lately. And so what happened this week was that at the end of the year last year, a slaughterhouse meatpacking company out in Homedale was cited once in September and then again in December for not following the humane slaughter regulations. So one thing to note, though, is you go quickly on the USDA's mandates, you know, some of these laws. You go quickly on their website and you can see that last year, more than 60 different companies, including Ida Beef in Burley earlier in around June or July of 2019, have received similar violations. But just this week, PETA released a press release, a national press release, and called on the U.S. Attorney's office to open up a criminal investigation into conditions at this slaughterhouse, which, to be fair, the USDA inspectors did find that there were definite violations there, and they were cited for that. And they're still under supervision for those violations. But it's definitely kind of an interesting issue, and it's definitely something that Idaho has had issues with in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it will be interesting to see where this goes.
Yes, I, of course, got in touch with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they, of course, cannot confirm or deny whether there's any type of investigation. We'll have to see if PETA follows up and makes this a priority, because, of course, we all remember earlier this year their demand to change the name of Chicken Dinner Road out in Caldwell. Right. So there's been some focus, and so it'll be interesting to see if there's follow-up and further investigations. But it's definitely not new to Idaho to have some of these issues, and it's partially because, like, you know, we talked about earlier, cattle and cattle's a big industry in Idaho. We're one of the leading states for this in the country, and so this is definitely something that people are dealing with here.
And that PETA will keep their eye on because
yes.
of us being such an agricultural state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Heath, but before we wrap up, I want to talk about our troops and them deploying overseas. You've covered this a bit, and we've seen recently some troops getting prepared.
Yeah, it was kind of at the beginning of the State of the State, and it raised my eyebrows a little bit because of the numbers. The governor said that there's going to be 4,000 troops going to an exercise called Defender 2020. It's going to be the biggest European, the biggest deployment of U.S. troops to Europe in about 25 years. Approximately 20% of them are going to be from the Idaho National Guard. Now, to be clear, they are not all Idahoans because we draw from almost all of our neighboring states, but it's going to be a huge Idaho contingent. And obviously, we've had big tensions with Russia, and while they might not be saying this directly, this is an exercise to strengthen our partnership with NATO. It's certainly in the context of ongoing tensions with Russia. And then at the same time, there's going to be 400 Air National Guard troops headed to combat deployments in what the military term Southwest Asia, which means the Middle East. And they're going to be around big bases in the Middle East. They keep that sort of quasi-secret, even though you can look at Google Maps and kind of see yeah. where these bases are. But
well, and when you call it Southwest Asia, is that what?
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
I mean, you just think Asia, right?
Right. Right. But if you look at a map and
it's different.
It kind of makes sense. But yes. And obviously what's happening with Iran, I'm sure, is on the minds of those families. We'll see what they actually involve. But there's a lot of uncertainties in the region right now. There's going to be quite a few Idaho troops in the spring heading to Europe and the Middle East.
So let's get back to the Europe part of this deployment. Is it a specified time, I guess, with both of these deployments, or do we know that?
They're always a little fuzzy with the timeline, but around April, they're going to be heading over, and the European deployment is going to be roughly a month. And it's going to be, it's kind of war games. I mean, it's going to be huge exercises with heavy equipment. They're going to be working with European allies. And as I said, I mean, there's going to be 20,000 U.S. troops, so it's going to be a pretty huge display, and obviously, Russia's going to be one of the countries that they want to be watching.
But even, I mean, 20,000 is a big number, but when you think 20% coming from the Idaho Guard, I mean, that's a big number for Idaho.
Right. And I was actually out, I was out at the Guard's depot, their equipment depot. It's pretty far out in the desert, kind of closer to the Owyhees, I think, than us. But yeah, they are actually a specialized unit. They're a specialized heavy combat unit, and there's only five such units, National Guard units, I should say, in the country. So that's part of the reason they're being picked for this. The other is they actually sought this out because it's good for their training, and it's kind of their turn in the rotation to do something like this. So I'll have more on this later, but they're pretty excited about getting to participate in this exercise and kind of test their mettle.
I want to thank all of you for coming in this Friday. Will be an interesting legislative session. And so we will, of course, keep everyone updated on Fridays during our reporter roundtable. And our panel today for our roundtable, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Heath Drusen with Boise State Public Radio News, and Nicole Foy with the Idaho Statesman. Always good to have you guys in.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to be talking to the newest Idaho legislator, just appointed by the governor a few weeks ago. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.